Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Will and Divvy on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we got a lot to do today. Greg Cosell in 15 minutes. He'll be great. He always is. But we're still talking out this Deebo Samuel podcast, Cleats and Combos podcast comment, where he says we've been the best team in the league for a while. And as a 49er fan, how does that make you feel? And I also wonder, like, this kind of just came up as part of the conversation. Would you rather be a Rams fan or a 49ers fan based on how the last 5 years have gone? Again, I totally get it, especially if you're someone who's not been alive long enough to see the 49ers win a championship. I would totally get it if you said Rams. I totally get it.
Yeah.
Grandy, you'd probably say Rams, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because he's never seen one. You and I watch the 49ers have a dynasty. So I'm like, no, I have fun every year. I want to be in the mix. I want to be good every year. Right now, I have Rams fans in the family. They're very angry a lot most Sundays right now. 0-2, Puka, IR, yep. Cooper, IR. Bummed. So,
and the last Rams title was St. Louis. So, and most of those people that you're referring to were not alive when the St. Louis Rams were doing their thing, right?
Well, the Rams just won 4 years ago.
No, prior to that.
Oh, well, right.
Prior to this one, if you want to talk about Rams fans,
yes.
Like my buddy Marty Fisher, shout out Pescado, who lives in Arizona, who is our age. He was a Ram fan back when they were in L.A., and he stayed with them in St. Louis, and he stayed with them coming back here.
Yeah, a lot of them bailed and like went to the Chargers for a second, and then they left, right. And then this, that, and the other. How about Adam in the city? Hi, Adam. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. When that video came out last night, my immediate reaction was just, you haven't won anything. How can you be the best team? This is just coming from a Niners fan. Being in San Francisco from here, I'm just like, you cannot say that if you haven't won it. And then on top of that, the way that you have lost a lot of those big games, you've choked the games away. You've had, the Rams game, both Chiefs games, you've had 10-point leads. Two of them, you've had 10-point leads in the fourth quarter, and you lost. So, no, you cannot say that you're the best team when you don't win. That's just that's my belief, and that's just like how I feel. I think the timing of this video is really bad, minus the injuries. It just sounds like, the Niners players kind of crying about where they felt it should have been after they lost the big one again. It's like, we've heard this story before. So that's kind of my stance of that.
Yeah, Adam, I get it. To me, it also feels a little bit like, and I think Russell Westbrook said this at one point, like, Russell Westbrook, hey, who do you think the best point guard in the world is? He's like, me. And we're all like, well, no, you're not.
No.
But he's a player, so he has to think that way. In order to perform at this level, don't you kind of have to think that you're the best?
You should, and you like the self-confidence, and you like the team confidence from Deebo Samuel, and I'm not faulting him for having that self-opinion of him and his team, but it does ring a little bit hollow, as the caller was pointing out, the fact that he's currently injured. So yeah, you have the best team, but you don't have McCaffrey, and you're out yourself, and you're 1-1. So it does ring a little bit hollow based on all the circumstances of going on right now.
GPD and Hayward, what's up, brother? How are you?
Hey, love you guys, man. That's very good. You know what? I will bet that these guys, all these football players, they record your, you know, they go to the Odyssey app, and then they listen to you later because you guys are the best show on radio. When they want to know about what everybody thinks about them and what they know and what the fans know, it's 95.7 The Game. That's why we tune in. Kudos to you guys.
Love you, GPD. Love you, GPD.
Okay. Kudos.
Hold on. Let me tell you about what Devo said. You are right. Of course, it's about you are a Niner. You are good. You have the best talent in the NFL, but you're not the best. You're correct. You didn't win it, dog. So whoever wins the Lombardi is the best. You can't say you are the best if you didn't win the Lombardi. You can say we have the best talent and we feel that we're the best, but we haven't won the big one. See, it's all about semantics and what you say. You got to watch what you say.
Right? All right. So here, GPD, here's the example, and I'll let you be the first to answer this, but we can put it out to everybody. Let's go back to... And I know that, you know, you and I and Dibs, like, we're old enough to have remembered this. Let's go back to the New York Giants victory over the New England Patriots when the Patriots had not lost a football game all year long.
Manning gets away. Helmet. Tyree.
There you go.
That's my Joba.
It's very fantastic.
Thank you. Economy of words.
I think that a reasonable person can answer this either way, but what is your perspective? Were the New York Giants the best team that year?
Of course not. If you play that game 20 different times, they lose 19 times.
Okay, GPD.
And I think they played earlier that year, if I'm not mistaken. And the Patriots beat them.
At the very end of the year.
Correct.
I think the last game of the year. GPD, how would you answer that?
Me, dog. That's a no for me, dog. You're not the best.
Okay. Grandy, thank you, GPD. Grandy, who was the best team that year?
Who raised the Lombardi Trophy?
That's right. No, Eli.
Again, I think a reasonable person can answer that both ways. I get it if that's the way you look at it. Very black and white thinking. And that's fine. I'm not saying it's wrong. I don't tend to feel that way. I think the Patriots, the same way I think the Golden State Warriors, Toronto Raptors year, or even the Cavaliers year, they didn't win. But if you ask me who the best team, the New England Patriots were the best team that year.
Right.
And part of the fun of sports is sort of getting there toward the end, assessing who the best team is, and then going, can you do it? And they usually can, but not always.
And that's where this whole idea about best team for me falls short of what actually moves me, because who cares who the best team is? Ultimately, you're either the champion or you're not the champion. And if you're the best team, then we can look at why you didn't win the big game, and we could talk about Kyle Shanahan, and many fans want to. Last year, you didn't know the overtime rules, and the Jimmy G year, you should have run the ball, and Kittle was open, and Emmanuel Sanders, and Jimmy G, and all the rest of it. We can pick through the wreckage of a loss when you were the best team, but ultimately for me, it doesn't matter who the best team is. There's the champion, and then there's everybody else.
How about let's go to Ryan in Irvine. Ryan, thank you for calling. What's up?
Hey, guys. This is one thing I think is kind of funny. It seems like players, they obviously follow the lead of the head coach. And in my opinion, I feel like Debo feels comfortable. He said this not just in this podcast, but he said this a few times now that he feels like they have the best team. And I think he feels comfortable saying things like that, especially on such a big platform, because that's how Kyle views this team. That's how Kyle has viewed his teams for the last several years. And I think he instills that in his players. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I really don't. I don't know if it's too much confidence and not enough reflection on the team to be like, how can we actually get better so we can win this thing? I know confidence, arrogance is needed at that level of sports, but sometimes I question if maybe a little more humility would actually get the job done. And then the second thing, as far as being a Rams fan or a Niners fan, I'm 37 years old. I've lived in Orange County my whole life. I am surrounded by quote-unquote Rams fans who get the trump card of saying, yeah, but we won a championship. And it's just, they have the ability, this, like, I don't know, just calm and peace, knowing that they got the job done, they have a championship, and I think probably for the next several years, they're just going to ride on that. And it's like, trust me, the answer to the question is, would you rather be a Niner fan or a Rams fan? Niner fan all day long, because I love the players that we have, the organization that we have, and the journey, like as you like to say, the process has been amazing. There's been some amazing moments as Niner fans, but that tension that we feel with 30 years since not getting the job done, I was playing outside the whole time.
Yeah, you know? Ryan, your phone started to cut out there a little bit, but it's a really good call. I don't know if that I buy that Kyle Shanahan is always feeding the guys that we're the best team. We haven't heard him talk about it much. I do remember John Lynch before the year being like, hey, why are we talking about a Super Bowl? You got to earn that every year.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just start there. So I don't know that actually comes from the staff on down. I tend to believe that, you know, these are wide receivers, and this is the way a lot of wide receivers talk.
And you've been successful, of course you're going to feel that way.
We're sponsored by Lucky California, and the phenomenal Greg Cosell joins us next. Is Brandon Ayuk actually getting open? Why is scoring down? Why is there more running than passing so far this league year? That and much more with the incomparable Greg Cosell next on Willard and Dibbs.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
I feel like you're excited to talk to Greg Cosell. You just put a beanie on.
Yeah, it's a little cold. Cold out today, and when you have no hair, you tend to get colder a little bit faster.
I think it's warmer today than yesterday, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends.
Dude, yesterday, that after the show yesterday, last night, it's chilly.
A little chilly.
Chilly.
Yeah, I went to the heavier sweatshirt today. And, you know, sometimes you go beanie. And you and I have talked about the temperature in this room, how it's a little bit of a fluctuation sensation. based on the time of day. And
cha-ching!
You know, buck.
Sometimes it gets a little chilly. You throw the beanie on, you feel warmer.
Good, good.
It was hot during the crossover.
Real hot. It was good. Yeah, 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to get back to the calls here shortly. But let's hop out to the River Islands guest line because 3:15 on Wednesdays, this is our jam, man. This is our jam. We love this. Hanging out, spending some time with the senior producer of NFL Films, the absolute guru of the NFL film, and that is none other than Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, what's cooking today?
Gentlemen, what's happening? I hope nobody's like getting too upset thinking like the whole season's falling apart now, you know?
No, the season's over.
It was a good run.
But Christian
McCaffrey. It was a good run, and you know, time to get rid of the quarterback, move on. You know, it's time to change everything. You know how it goes.
They say Super Bowl or bust. It's bust. Greg, we got so many questions for you. Can we start with this? Across the league, we're seeing a trend. It's only 2 weeks, but a lot less passing, a lot more running. Yep. We're watching quarterbacks have a hard time getting to 300 yards. What gives? Why?
There's probably a couple of reasons for that. Some could just be a function of, you know, teams not playing a lot of people in the preseason, which, you know, over time has an impact. And it has an impact in particular for offensive line play. Because those guys need to play and then find cohesion together. I think it has a lot to do, too, with how teams are playing defensively. There's more and more what we call too high structure defensively. It makes it harder to throw the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels. So you're seeing a lot more, they're not checkdowns necessarily, but a lot more short throws. And if those receivers get tackled, obviously you're not gaining a lot of yards. So, you know, those are just two things I can think of immediately. I hope people understand that I don't know what you're going to ask me. So, you know, those are two things that immediately came to my mind.
And I think those are good and accurate answers. And if you're a field goal kicker, you're loving it right now. But I want to focus on the first part of your answer, which is offensive line play, particularly with the 49ers, because it seemed like in the run game they were effective, but in the pass game looked like they struggled. What did you see from the Niners' O-line against Minnesota in week two?
Yeah, well, there were six sacks. The Vikings are one of the toughest defenses in the league to play because they're so, so multiple with what they do, with their fronts, with their looks. They put people up on the line of scrimmage. They move people around. So then you have to identify people. They rushed six an awful lot. Last year, by the way, they rushed six more than any team in the league, and they're basically doing that again. They rushed five or more on 20 of Purdy's 46 dropbacks. So they clearly were going after him. They're really good with stunts, and stunts are a great example of where you need communication with your offensive line. They struggled a bit at times in this game, but the Vikings are a really, really difficult defense to play against.
Greg, a couple of questions about the 49er receivers. As a group right now, they are last in the league in terms of separation. Is that A to B? Does that just mean Niner receivers are not running great routes and getting open? Could there be other reasons for that? What say you?
I don't know what that means, to be honest with you, because, you know, I have to watch the tape to see this kind of stuff. Those kinds of stats don't mean a lot to me because I don't know who's doing that, guys. I'm just being honest with you. It's just like when I see stats, well, quarterback being pressure throws. Well, I have to see what they mean by pressure. I don't know what they mean. So I don't know what the definition of separation is.
Well, can I ask it this way? Do you see that the Niner receivers are doing a good job of getting open?
Well, I know this, that the Vikings played more zone than man, so I don't know what the definition of separation means against zone coverage.
Got it.
So I would say that you have to understand one thing. Purdy completed 28 of 36. He made a lot of difficult throws in the middle of the field, which is what the 49ers offense is all about. It's throwing the ball between the numbers. Now, the Vikings came in with a plan where they wanted to play what we call robber coverage and lurk coverage, which tries to minimize throws between the numbers. That's what some teams do against the 49ers, because that's the foundation of their pass game, is to work between the numbers. So you will see teams play robber coverage, which, by the way, the Cleveland Browns did last year in the game that the 49ers lost. So teams do this. In some weeks it works, some weeks it doesn't. If one thing worked all the time, everybody would do the same thing. So there are some weeks things work. For instance, you can play robber coverage and the 49ers can beat it, but let's say on the same play you have robber coverage, the pass rush gets home. So there's all kinds of reasons why things happen and don't happen in given in a game. To me, there was not a problem with the 49er pass game in terms of their receivers. I mean, I know he's going to be out for a number of weeks, but Samuel had a big game. They actually busted on a Kittle play early in the game for a 25-yard completion. Jennings had some plays, you know, in the middle of the field. So I didn't really think the 49ers pass game was a problem from Purdy's perspective.
What about from Brandon Ayuk's perspective? And I know that these are the first two games back and he had no preseason. Are you seeing the same sort of route ability that you talked about in the preseason? His short area quickness and his ability to be at top speed and break open on routes?
You know, I'm not studying him on every single play. You know, you have to understand one thing. A lot of times, you know, plays are called, and it might be a read to one side of the field, and if he's not on that side of the field, then, you know, he's not going to be involved in the progression necessarily. You would expect that as the season progresses that he'll be more involved. Don't forget, he missed a lot of time. So it's just, it would just be normal. And again, I'm not going to say this is true or not because I'm not studying him on every play, but it would just be normal for him not to be at the level that, you know, that he can be at based on his physical abilities, because he missed a lot of time. And it, no matter how much, let's say, running he did on the outside, it's not the same as participating in camp, and it's not the same as playing in games. So it will probably take him a little time. And I'm sure now with Samuel out, McCaffrey still being out, and to be honest with you guys, I'm a little concerned about McCaffrey and the way this all played out. I'm just worried he might end up missing the season. But again, who knows? But I'm sure Ayuk will become a bigger factor now going forward because Samuel will be out.
Senior producer of NFL Films, Greg Cosell, is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Greg, I've heard from a lot of NFL people I respect who break down the videos and whatnot. The setup on defense on the 97-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson really put the DBs in a bad spot and didn't make any sense. What did you see on that particular play?
Well, I can describe what happened on the play. You know, I mean, the Vikings shifted to a 2x2 set. Both tight ends were aligned to the closed boundary and stacked, and there was stacked twins to the field. It was play action. It was a shot play. They went 7-man protection. Okay, Naylor was the outside receiver in the stacked look. He ran the deep over route, and Jefferson from the inside ran the corner post. Now, post safety Brown, Jair Brown, he was late to react to Jefferson, so he allowed him to get over the top. As a post safety, if anybody runs a post route, that's your responsibility. He did not play his responsibility properly. If he played his responsibility properly, that throw would not have been there. So, you know, my guess is, you know, I don't listen to all the interviews of teams after games. My guess is Brown probably said that he didn't play his responsibility properly, because he didn't.
Yeah, and as a result, Jefferson got deep and got over the top and was able to score from 97 yards out.
Look, it's pretty simple. If you're playing a coverage, which was essentially cover three, and so in cover three you have a deep middle safety. If any ball's caught in the deep middle, that's the responsibility of the deep post safety. So Brown made the mistake on that play. He was late to react. Now, Jefferson ran kind of a he ran a corner post. So when Jefferson, you know, made his move toward the corner, it's possible Brown thought, okay, he's going to run a sail route, and now my corner is going to be responsible for that, which, who I believe was Ward, because it was to that side of the field, and Ward's the left corner. So he probably, I don't know what's in his head, but he may have thought that, okay, Jefferson is now not going to be my responsibility because he's going to run to the corner. So he sort of stopped. And then when he came back on the post, Jefferson, that is, Brown was too low, and he couldn't get deep enough.
Yeah, it looked like Ward had actually followed the over route anyway, and so there was no corner help on the back side of that. And that was one of only four plays upon which the 49ers blitzed. When you look at the tape, are you seeing a team that is relying on a four-man pressure a lot?
More so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, normally they had, look, we talked about this last week. They've got a really good four-man pass rush. You know, this was an odd kind of game because the Darnold did not throw a ton of balls. This was not a game where the Vikings dropped back a lot in the game, just the way the game played out. I thought they had some issues, though, in their zone coverage concepts, and they're predominant. They play more zone than man, and particularly in the first half, I thought there were too many voids that defined the reads and the throws for Darnold and allowed him to throw within the structure of the play call and with really good timing. I thought Naylor had an 18-yard completion in the reception in the first half. Jefferson had a 16-yarder on 3rd and 13 late in the second quarter. There were the voids were too defined, and that makes it much easier for a quarterback.
Greg, I'd love your perspective on this. Just from years of watching Kyle Shanahan's system and watching the 49er games in the last, certainly at least 3 years, when you hear that Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel are both going to miss a game, that makes you think what in terms of how much the 49ers need to change a normal game plan?
Well, it'll change what they can do formationally and with some motions because we know what McCaffrey can do. Although I got to tell you, Jordan Mason continues to look really, really good. If I told you that they'd run for 100 yards and Purdy would throw for over 300, you'd probably say that the 49ers would win that game, would you not?
Yeah,
of course.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, offensively, in terms of putting up yards, that was not a problem. But I think in terms of what they can do going forward with what they can do with motions and formation diversity, that'll probably be limited to some degree because Samuel and McCaffrey are the two guys that really do that and give all those looks to the defense. So, again, I'm not, you know, in the meetings. I don't know how Kyle coaches it. Maybe it's possible that the players who will go in can do this stuff. In terms of the tactics of it, they probably can't do it as well because Samuel and McCaffrey, that's what they do. But I would imagine there'll be some limitations to what they can do from a motion perspective, and they're one of the highest percentage motion teams in the league, and from a formation multiplicity perspective.
From the perspective of the ground game, what are you seeing differently with Jordan Mason as opposed to when McCaffrey is there? Because I'm seeing a run game that's a little bit more direct inside the tackles, and I'm seeing Juszczyk used more as an on the line of scrimmage blocker. What are you seeing on the film as far as their run game concepts go?
Well, it's funny you say that because I thought that they actually ran the mid zone and wide zone run game really, really well. And I thought Mason showed an excellent feel for those runs, patience, vision. He's really good at reading his blocks and what we call defensive gap fluidity because gaps change. Once the ball is snapped, they're not the same as when, you know, before the snap of the ball. He's got short area burst. He runs with velocity. He hits it with speed. While you wouldn't call him shifty, he's got enough of it to navigate confined space at the second level of the defense. And he's really physically tough and competitive. I mean, he's your classic sustaining back. He gets tough, hard-earned yards. Now, he's obviously, you can't do with him in the pass game what McCaffrey is, and that does, you know, place a limitation on what they can do. So, you know, those kinds of limitations do matter over the course of time. It forces Kyle and his offensive staff to have to do some things differently.
Greg, let's start looking ahead. I got a couple questions about this matchup with the Rams this weekend. First and foremost, right, there's no McCaffrey, there's no Deebo. Guess what? There's no Cooper Kupp, no Puka Nacua.
Yeah, like, I know.
Yeah. So based on your knowledge of the Rams, how much of what they do on offense is going to be unavailable because of the loss of those two stars?
Well, I mean, obviously they're going to be playing with lesser players, so I think it impacts them greatly because one thing about Nacua in particular is he's phenomenal working between the numbers in the middle of the field. They don't have a receiver now who can really do that. So I think you're going to see some creativity from Sean McVay. I think they'll try to run the ball. I thought the 49ers had some issues on the edge in the run game this past week. You saw Chandler have a number of runs to the edge. So I think you'll see them have to face a Rams offense that probably focuses a little more on the run game, assuming they can do it. Now, obviously, if you're going to run the ball, you have to have some success to stay on schedule. You know, Stafford is so, so good that, you know, he is one of those quarterbacks that if he is on, he can probably throw it to anybody, but it probably, for them as well, limits the kind of route concepts they can run. They're another team that uses a ton of motion. I mean, you're dealing with two teams that use as much motion, along with probably the Dolphins, and obviously Mike McDaniel being there and his background, but you're seeing two teams that use motion as much as any team in the league.
Yeah, same background, obviously, with McVay and Shanahan and the tree they come from. How similar are these two schemes?
You're talking about McVay and Shanahan?
Yeah.
There's some similarities, but there's also some differences. Obviously, McVay is an 11 personnel guy, meaning he plays with one back, one tight end, and three wide receivers when he has all his people. So, you know, that's what he's done over the recent years. They've been among the higher percentage teams in the league playing out of 11 personnel. Clearly, we know that the 49ers under Kyle play probably 40-45% of their offensive snaps out of what we call 21 personnel, meaning, you know, two backs and it's Juszczyk. So there's a difference right there that changes the way you can run the football. You know, because Juszczyk, in a sense, he's a fullback slash tight end, but just changes some of the blocking concepts in your run game. So there's some differences there. But the use of motion is something that they both do quite a bit.
So for the 49ers going up against a Ram team without Puka Nacua and without Cooper Kupp and likely playing a lot of 11 personnel still, would you anticipate the 49ers play a lot more base defense with three linebackers to try to stop the run game and dare Stafford to beat them with other weapons?
No, I think they'll play nickel. I don't think they're going to play base defense with three linebackers against 11 personnel. I think they'll play with their nickel. Because, I mean, there's still going to be three wide receivers on the field. So I don't think they're going to play base versus three wide receivers. I mean, is it possible on maybe some first and tens they might do that? But they're not going to do that foundationally as the way in which they play the game.
Greg, how deep of a dive did you do on the trenches in that Niner-Viking game? There's some individuals I'd love to ask you about if you got a really good look.
I mean, sometimes I do. It depends who you want to ask me about.
Well,
like, you know,
let me throw a couple names at you. You tell me what you saw. One on the defensive side, Javon Hargrave, big free agent signing a year ago. He's been disappointing. What are you seeing, if anything?
I mean, I think Hargrave is a better pass rusher than he is a run defender overall. I think as a pass rusher, he's very powerful and he's really good driving, you know, interior O lineman back into the pocket, but I think that's his game more than being a run defender. So, you know, I didn't study him specifically in this game, but that's who he is as a player.
And then on the other side of the ball, there's some videos starting to circulate today that are not too kind to Niners center Jake Brendel. Whatever of the six sacks and the breakdowns there, what did you see up the middle?
Oh, I mean, they got a couple of sacks on stunts, which had nothing to do with Brendel. I mean, so again, I didn't view him, and I wasn't studying him, I'm being honest, on every play, obviously. But I didn't come away from watching the tape and seeing those sacks thinking, man, that Brendel had a really bad game. I thought there were some really well-schemed stunts that were able to get home. And those stunts did not involve Brendel. So, you know, it's very possible he had some bad snaps, but I don't think he was the reason that the offensive line may have struggled on, you know, in some pass protections.
The 49ers have really relied on two defensive ends, and I think that Nick Bosa had a pretty good game in week two. But what are you seeing overall from this Niners pass rush through 2 weeks so far?
You know, I think, look, it's two games. I think you're dealing with two guys. Bosa is a dominant player. You talk to O-linemen, which I have because I've been fortunate enough to go to events where there's O-linemen, and they talk about Bosa in just glowing terms, the kind of player that he is. So there's no problem with Bosa. I think Floyd's a solid pass rusher on the other side. He's totally different than Bosa, so he's a totally different kind of player. And then you have the interior players. Like I said, Hargrave's the best part of his game is pass rush. Collins is, I've always liked Malik Collins a lot. Now, obviously, they play other players. They play Givens. He gets snaps. But I don't think the pass rush is going to be an issue. You know, I think that down four, particularly when those guys are in pure pass situations, is a really good foursome to rush the quarterback.
Greg, real quick, I'd love to just ask you about the three surprising 2-0 teams in the NFC. Get your take on the sustainability of what they're doing, the Saints, Bucks, and Vikings.
Well, the Saints, I have found, and I've seen both of their games, both sides of the ball on tape. I think the Saints have really looked good through two games. Again, as you said, short sample size. But two things that are probably overlooked about the Saints, because everybody will want to talk about Derek Carr and all, you know, that's everybody wants to talk about the quarterback. I think their O-line through two games has been phenomenal. Athletic, physical, really strong points. See, there's a perfect example where when you watch tape, it jumps out. Like, I'm not saying, oh, I better watch the O-line, but it jumps out when you watch their tape. And the other thing is I think they have a really, really good defense. And Dennis Allen, when you talk to offensive coaches in the league, they will tell you that he is very difficult to play against. And they've got really good players at all three levels of their defense. And he does a lot of things. There's a lot of versatility with use of personnel and with tactics. So I've been really, really impressed with the Saints through 2 weeks.
Greg, we're always really, really impressed with your visits, man. Thank you so much for coming on as always.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Okay, we'll talk to you again next week. There it is, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. So those of you, and these are deep divers now. I know a lot of you are just driving around doing your Wednesday, but if you've been on social media and you're suddenly freaked out about Jake Brendel, because there have been some videos that have kind of compiled some bad snaps for him. Yeah, Cosell calms you down a little bit. He said it wasn't that bad.
A little bit. It's only 2 weeks, and so it's much more of a long-term view at the offensive line. But if you just watch the tape from week two against Minnesota, the center and the right side of the offensive line was a problem, and it's just something to keep an eye on.
We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Back to your calls coming up, 888-957-9570. We've been talking about what Debo said on a podcast. Wait until you hear the quote that Emmanuel Acho put out there about the 49ers on FS1 that also got our guy Mark Grandy to spit up Cheerios earlier this morning. That is coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Come on! Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's rock, let's ride. I don't know if this is, did you get the same overarching feeling? And maybe Niner fans don't want to be told this by someone who's just diving on film. He very much made it feel like, dude, the Niners were fine. The Niners were fine in that game. He liked the passing game. He built up the Minnesota Vikings. Said this is really, like, it's a very hard defense. It's a home opener, at home, all of that stuff. No Christian McCaffrey. Like, that's hard. Jordan Mason, he's clearly very high on him. He just sounded like he likes some of the things the Niners are doing offensively and believes that more often than not that's going to work in their favor.
Yeah, and I think that you can look at the game and you can draw the same conclusion. And we talked about all of the big plays that they did not make. A 97-yard pass play for a touchdown and you gave up 23 total points. So that was seven right there. And you had a situation where Minnesota was backed up at their own goal line, and they scored on a 97-yard pass play. And was the scheme not good? Yeah, you could look at that and say Charvarius Ward should have been on Justin Jefferson. They should have had a corner deeper. And as Greg Cosell just told us, Jair Brown as the deep safety should have been even deeper to prevent that very pass from happening. And so that was a mistake. You had a young player and you had George Odom back there as well. A couple of inexperienced players who failed to make a play. You had a punt block where Demetrius Flanagan fouls and Beal next to him, they were not on the same page and they let a free runner come in, and that was 3 points. So if you want to take those two plays away, that's 10 of their 23 points right there. And then you look at the positives in the game. The Niners did have 399 yards of total offense, only two fewer than the previous game where they won handily. So you had two turnovers from Brock Purdy, a bad pick and a bad fumble. You had a block punt and a terrible coverage breakdown, and you only lost by six.
Yep.
So there are a lot of things you can look at and see positives. You had Jordan Mason go for 100 yards again. Brock Purdy was mostly good, couple of mistakes, but he was mostly good. And you played a tight game against a team in their home opener. So I do think he's right to look at more positives than negatives, even though you lost the game.
Well, and I also do think about that whole, like, the state of the league thing. I think it would be wild if somebody was just in the weeds, didn't watch any other football, they only watched the 49er games, and you came out of these two games and then said, by the way, Brock Purdy is number one in the NFL in passing yards. Like, what? What the hell's going on in these other football games?
Right.
Nobody through 2 weeks has like been on a heater. Nobody's thrown for 300 in both games. Brock Purdy in a game where on Monday night, our takeaway was, well, they didn't ask him to do much. And then in Minnesota, the takeaway was, he got a C, two turnovers, couldn't convert on third down. He leads the league in passing yards. That's crazy. I think that says something about two things. I think it says something about where the league is offensively right now through 2 weeks. And it also does say that, you know, our hopes for Brock Purdy right now are so high on a week-in and week-out basis that if you get two games like that that were both, like, good-ish but not great, you come away disappointed. The bar is high.
The bar is high, and also the league in general is relatively low. And I know that week two in the NFL set a record for most field goals in a week. And week one in the NFL, I believe, is the fourth most field goals in a week of all time. So through 2 weeks, you've gotten a lot of red zone struggles and a lot of field goals. And I do think there's a couple things at play. One, what Greg Cosell said, which is teams are playing a lot of two deep, which means teams are basically saying, 12-play drive, go ahead. We don't want you to beat us over the top. You have teams that are not taking a lot of risks, and they're making sure that everything stays in front of them. And the other part of it is, Mark, and this is twofold. One, the new touchback rule gives you the ball at the 30, which means 30 yards and you're in field goal range, because of the other piece of my point, which is what something you said earlier, I think yesterday or Monday, the 50-yard field goal now, you expect to make it.
It's a chipper.
It's a chipper.
Yeah.
So if you start at the 30-yard line with a touchback, all you really need is to get to the opposing 40, which is 30 yards, and you're in field goal range.
It was funny. I was watching the end of that Chiefs-Bengals game, and Butker was lining up from like 53 yards. And it just hit me, because I was like, man, if that was the scenario not that long ago, you're down by two, there's 2 seconds on the clock, you're lining up from 53. I'm like, ugh, this could go either way. In fact, late afternoon, outdoor game, I'm going to lean, and this is about 40% chance this is going to go in and the Chiefs are going to win the game. But I didn't. I grabbed a drink, and I looked at the TV, and I'm like, oh, the Chiefs are going to win.
Yeah.
And poof, right through the middle with
Between the eyes.
Right between the eyes.
Thank you.
15 yards to spare. Yeah, easy. Like Harrison Butker, no matter what he thinks about gender, I'm like, he gonna make this kick.
Easy one. And I do think that it was the possession before that where they lined up from, it might have been 70 or 71, and they lined it up, and they thought about it, and then they either called timeout or they took the delay, and then they punted. But
it's coming soon.
There was a thought that they were going to kick one from 70.
Why wouldn't it? Like, bigger, stronger, faster, always. Why? Like, if a 55-yarder is a yawn now, how far are we from a 75-yarder?
Not that far.
Not that far.
Well, and you had Aubrey from Dallas make one from 66, yeah. But there was a penalty on the play,
right.
And so it got erased. But I do think that that's part of it, where defenses are playing more conservatively. You're playing a lot more too deep, where, you know, they're giving you the 6-yard completion, the 8-yard completion. And then when you get down to the red zone, and we have seen this with the 49ers so far, red zone offense has not been great. But across the league, red zone efficiency is down a little bit through 2 weeks because teams are happy to bend but not break and force you inside the 20.
Yep.
All right, are you going to go for the touchdown now? We'll give you the 3. But we're going to be a lot tougher in the red zone.
We got something juicy from Emmanuel Acho that we'll play in a second, but we want to get back to everybody who's still waiting on hold based on our previous conversation, which was about Deebo Samuel on his own podcast saying, among other things, we feel like we've been the best team in the league for a while. And as a 49er fan, when you hear a player say that, how does it make you feel? 888-957-9570. Back to Matt in Arizona. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling. What's up?
How you guys doing?
Good.
So to the point about Deebo's comment, like, you could say you're the best team, but the best team doesn't make the egregious mistakes that cost them Super Bowls. So Kansas City has proven to be the best team. But the label of loser, when we talk about the Niners are losers, that's a reflection more how you feel about the game and the team than it is about the outcome. The game magnitude is huge. I mean, look how easily we're saying the Niners are going to bounce back from this past Sunday. So we're not calling them losers. We expect them to bounce back. But after that game, they're called losers because it's just a different magnitude. But when you also look at the outcome, when you love a team, your team loses, you're hurt. You're upset. So you call them losers. And when a team you hate loses, you hate watch them. You get hyped up. And we do it to the Cowboys, Eagles, Rams, Seahawks every year. But if it's a team you're indifferent about, you won't think of them as a loser because you don't really care. Ask yourself how you feel about the Broncos-Panthers Super Bowl. Like, Dibs will say, oh, they stink. But do they really? I mean, do they really?
do they, Dibs?
They stink.
Do they? Thank you, Matt. Good to hear from you. Yeah.
It's all relative. And, you know, you could look at anything you want. And I'm looking at the 49ers release that they sent out today in advance of the Rams game. And this kind of bolsters Deebo's point, but it also maybe infuriates Niner fans. Since 2019, the Niners are third in point differential. They're plus 590. Since 2019, they're third in yards per game. In total net yardage, they're number one. Total turnover differential, they're number one. So all these things since 2019, 2022, wherever you want to draw the line, they're among the top three.
They're really good. Yeah.
They haven't won the Super Bowl. But so what Debo's saying on the surface is right. Since he's been around, they've been one of the best teams in football. Winning percentage, yardage, turnovers, touchdowns, points, all the rest of it. Except when you get to February.
I'm just not offended by it, but I understand that it's very hard to hear. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's, like, quote-unquote wrong on an emotional level. I don't really look at it as a black-and-white type of a conversation. Fact or fiction, are they the best team? I mean, obviously, this is a subjective comment. I understand why he feels it. I understand why he feels comfortable saying it. I just think as a 49er fan, it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear because they haven't won that game. And in many ways, makes it worse. It makes it worse. But you're like, I don't know. Think for a second how you'd feel if he had said the opposite. You know what I mean? Grandy, would you feel better if he was like, look, the way we look at it, we're one of the best teams in the league, just not as good as the Chiefs. Would you like that?
I'd like him to say, we're one of the best teams in the league. We just haven't quite got over the hump, but that's what we're setting out to do this year.
But, like, how many, and I'm sorry to paint with a broad brush here. I don't mean to do this and, like, be a wide receiver-ist, but how many receivers do you hear in this league talk like that? Like, I mean, go around the league. And I'm not saying it's all of them. You know what I mean? But, like, we've propped up Fred Warner's leadership a lot in the last handful of days. How many wide receivers do you think sound like Fred Warner? Or do most of them sound like Debo and Brandon and Tyreek Hill and Jamar Chase, who has already, in my opinion, ruined an entire season in his city with his franchise?
Not many, but I still wouldn't want my receiver to say that. Yeah, the other thing that it hints at me at, not that they're not focused, and that's not what this is at all, but it's almost as if I get a little worried that they're content with what they've accomplished over the last 5 years.
We've been
the best team in the league for the last 5 years. We're great. We're awesome.
But you could see his face when he said it, and I would argue that it's coming from a simmering frustration that they haven't done it.
If you're that frustrated about it, then I don't know how there's even a thought in your head that you've been the best. Because if you've been the best, then what are you frustrated about?
Because you haven't got the same reason you're frustrated.
Well, then you ain't the best.
Well, again, you have a very mathematical way of looking at this. And that, you know, like everybody, like I said earlier, I think a reasonable person can disagree on if you win, does that make you the best automatically? It sounds like you think so. I know a lot of people don't. You sound like you're a little bit more in the middle on that.
I am, but I'm not really concerned with who's the best. That to me becomes a bit of a loser mentality. If you tell me you're the best and you haven't won the title and you've been doing it now for 6 years, then for me, it rings pretty hollow and pretty empty because, yes, you're the best, and I could give you six more stats that the 49ers have put out since 2019 where the Niners are among the best. Lowest three and out percentage, they're third. Third and 10 conversion rate, they're third. Highest yak percentage, they're second. Most rushing TDs, they're first. And this is from the Niners. So all these things since 2019 that the Niners are putting out show that the Niners are among the best teams in football. Yet, Super Bowls won, they're tied for fifth, along with 28 other teams.
Yeah.
So for me, the whole idea of who's the best team, it doesn't matter. Well, it's a bunch of crap.
I don't think it's a bunch of crap, but I agree.
It's actually, I would speak more strongly than that, but we're on the radio.
Okay.
Who cares?
Well, it's not about who cares. It's about how does this hit you. That's all.
That's how it hits me.
Well, and I'll agree with you from this standpoint. You want to know where that conversation in my mind has always come up? I'll tell you in a second. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, on Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.